Northern Community Radio lost a very good friend yesterday. Harry Hutchins died after a long struggle with a rare disease that gradually sapped his strength and his energy. It ultimately limited his ability to enjoy the forests, waters, and landscapes that he loved. Harry was a forest ecologist. He taught forestry at Itasca College for 30 years. And for more than 30 years, Harry joined John Latimer on Tuesday mornings for a conversation they called A Talk on the Wild Side. In those conversations, Harry taught us the difference between growing and harvesting trees and forest ecology. Despite his illness, Harry brought his distinctive cackle and passion for the wonders of nature to A Talk on the Wild Side until the end of last October. Joining us now to help us remember Harry is his sidekick, John Latimer, and Scott Hall, who hosted the show for many years and credits Harry with teaching him to see our forests, wildlife, and waters in an entirely different way. Welcome, John and Scott.
Thank you,
Katie and Dan.
Yeah,
nice to be here.
It's good to see you guys. Well, I can see you, John. John, how did you and Harry meet?
It was a strange circumstance. My sister Jane, whose husband Richard works out at Itasca Community College, worked out at Itasca Community College, met Harry and Sue in the fall when Harry reported to work at ICC. That was in 1986. And my family has always been sort of welcoming. My mother has always been, you know, pour another cup of water in the soup, we can sit another person at the table. And my sister suggested that Harry and Sue, since they were new in town and didn't know anybody, be invited to Thanksgiving dinner with our clan. And they accepted. Harry showed up, and that was our first conversation. And right away. Yeah. I knew I'd found somebody special.
Yeah,
he was... He was an amazing fellow.
Scott, how did you and Harry meet?
Oh, my. Well, you know, Dan, you know our studios. We're out at Itasca Community College. And so John and I were on Tuesday mornings, and John either invited him in because he'd heard the program, but I guess it was at the station out at the college. And we talked off the air the first time, first conversations, we were talking off the air with me. He was telling me about forest ecology, and it was a fairly new idea to me, a new way to look at the forests and wild things. So I was really curious. And then when Harry went on the air with John, I mean, we saw him often after that. But he just immediately aroused my curiosity about a new way to learn about our wild world here.
What year was that? That was a long time ago.
John, 86, 87?
I think he was in town for, I think it might have been closer to 90, but it was right in there. Late 80s or early 90s. It's funny how I can't put a date on it either. And I don't know how it morphed into a weekly program. I don't remember any of those details. I just remember that he was such a interesting person to talk to, and he had such a perspective on nature. It was something brand new to me because I had only come to nature late in life. I was in my 30s when I started doing phenology and started trying to explore all of the different connections. And Harry came along and made some of that simple and disabused me of a few of my notions and steered me in the right direction.
You know, Harry, yeah. Harry was a huge fan of Aldo Leopold. And Harry would never say he was the first, anywhere near the first forest ecologist. But Leopold, he loved Leopold. And he also knew some mentors, had a mentor at the University of Wisconsin, I think, or down in Leopold Country there in southwest Wisconsin. And he would talk about Leopold and kind of in reverence and his writing. And so his timing to come to KXC was really quite good, because we went through quite an upheaval. I wouldn't call it a crisis, but it was a controversy in the early 90s over. We had Blandon just built number 6, a brand new huge paper mill, and we had other board plants in Cook and elsewhere going online, and the all of a sudden the prediction was the demand for especially Aspen in northern Minnesota was going to skyrocket. And so people began to say, well, do we have enough trees? Do we have the forest to sustain this really fast growth in the early 90s? And Harry, and so we did a bunch of interviews with people, foresters and people in industry. And Harry was like whispering in my ear all these years and just saying, you know, this is a good question. It was very simple, but it was really helpful. John, I know another big moment for me was when the early 90s, or when Harry introduced me to Mark Jacobs, the forester, head forester down in Aiken County. And Harry and I went down there. He took me down there, and Harry took his students down to Mark, some of Mark's timber stands that he was managing in Aiken County. And Harry and Mark and I walked through the woods together, and Harry was able to use specific examples of what I was trying to learn. And it just helped me. It just broadened my whole view. I started to see things, see many more things in the woods other than just some trees and animals and big plants. And John, you know, in a couple of weeks, you're going to start talking about all these tiny little flowers that are in the woods. and that's just what Harry was about, is the soil and the plants are trying to tell you something. You just got to pay attention.
Oh, indeed. Yeah. You know, talking about Aldo Leopold, the first trip I ever made with Harry was down to Baraboo to attend a conference at the Aldo Leopold Center. And we were, we met one of his mentors, a man named Dr. Stan Temple, who is teaches at the University of Wisconsin, and should be forgiven for that. But Harry and I had a great meeting with this very, very learned man, and it was just the beginning of our adventure down there. We decided after the Saturday session that we should go out and have a beer. And we were told of a place that sold pretty good beer, and we spent about an hour driving around the Wisconsin countryside looking for this place.
And knowing Wisconsin, passing up lots of places to drink.
Yes, we had in our mind this spot. We were told, go to the barn. And having worked on a dairy farm for a couple of years in my youth, I thought, it's got to be the place. So we drove around and drove around and drove around. And finally, we discovered this place after stopping and asking directions probably 3 different times. But it was hilarious. The two of us just totally lost. You could have put us in any woods in the world, and we would have been right at home. In the Wisconsin farmlands, we were absolutely totally lost, but we had it was the first time that I ever spent time, you know, more than a day in his company. And it just was, it was all fun, always.
Oh, well. Well, you know, Harry, I mentioned that Harry would never say he was an original forest ecologist, because John, you know, he introduced us to John Allmendinger and Mark Jacobs and other ecologists over the years, and the thing that I give you and Harry so much credit for is bringing the forest ecology out of the classroom and out of the laboratories and out of the science rooms and to all of us, so we can, to everybody who's listening to the radio, and creating this huge community of people who gradually learn a different understanding of our surroundings. And Harry was that kind of, you know, I got to say this, Harry was first of all a teacher. you know, I mentioned he taught me the basics of forest ecology, but teachers also are sometimes very short with the people they're working with, and they want you to get it. And if you don't get it, Harry could get very impatient with you if you didn't get it. You know, he could say, "Come on, you guys," and he would he could be short and had a little temper about getting his point across and you understanding it. And I always thought that was kind of charming in a way, because he was convincing me. John, you know, maybe for our listeners, we ought to just, as best as you can, define what forest ecology is.
Well, I wish I could do a better job. I wish Harry were here to help me. But as he taught me, and as I understand it, it is simply that web of life that makes up a forest. It's not just the flowers that we're looking at. It's not just the trees. It's not just, you know, the little bugs that are crawling around. It's all of them together and how each has its own part. And when that part gets out of balance, something else has to take place. And so it's this web of life that is in the forest. Well, everywhere, really, but especially in the forest.
You know, if you listen to Jeff Sundin on Thursday mornings, Jeff started about the time Harry did doing fishing reports for us. And a lot in those early days, it was about catching fish and how to catch fish. But Jeff grew, he might not say this, but the more I listened to Jeff over the years on Thursday mornings, I realized Jeff was becoming a lake ecologist. He was talking about weed beds and the evolution of a lake bottom through the spring, summer, fall, and winter. And he's talking about rock piles and habitat. He's talking habitat. And all of a sudden, Jeff's presentations all of a sudden became had a much broader appeal, I guess, than just how do you catch them. And so Jeff was I don't know if Jeff learned that from Harry. I can't say that, but he sure grew and grew into the appreciation. I've sat in a boat with Jeff, and we don't catch anything, and he's just having a great time looking at the bottom of the lake and figuring out what's going on. But I do think, you know, soils are another thing that you don't see what's under the ground, but soils, Harry taught me a lot about, you know, the soils will tell you a lot, he'd say, or he'd say, this plant will tell you a lot about what's going on here. And that to me was what forest ecology was about. It was about seeing things like you'd never seen them before and giving credit to some of the smallest things as being very important.
Yeah. You know, Harry was he was an explorer and a funny, funny guy. I remember him coming in one Tuesday morning and announcing that he'd been skiing up in Sumy and had fallen through the ice. And I teased him about having to ski with a PDF. A personal flotation device. It would not only help him, you know, bouncing off trees, but it would keep him afloat when he skied on the lake. Oh my.
You know, before we go, I saw Harry after I retired 5 years ago. I saw Harry a lot around town, and his illness was just beating him up, and I couldn't believe I'd see him at the YMCA lifting weights, and he was having trouble walking at this time. He'd use ski poles or he'd use walking sticks to get around. And you know, John, the last four or five years he was on the radio, we'd see him coming up the path on with his ski poles, walking up just very unsteadily, and you'd run and open the door for him. And of course, if it was snowing out or anything, we had to be sure he didn't slip and fall. But I was so impressed with he wasn't going to give in to this thing. And he got a special bike. He rode his bike a lot up until, I think, a year ago or so.
Mm-hmm. And he was riding last fall.
Was he? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, this guy was darn determined and tough. And you know, he didn't worry about what people thought about his condition. He just plowed right on through. And I know he looked forward to Tuesday mornings, John, especially in his later years. It meant so much to him to keep doing the radio show.
It did. And I think about his presence at the farmer's market. he would appear at the farmer's market early in the morning, and he would be there till noon, just chatting with people and looking at all of the things that were for available for sale. And he was just that sort of person. You're right about his determination, even in in his last days. You know, he would. It was funny.
You're a fighter.
Funny to hear you say it, Scott. But he used to look at me, and even though he wasn't able to say very much, he'd look at me and he'd go, "Come on, John."
He wants you to get it. He wants you to get it.
To get it. He's a get me out of here. I say, Harry, if you need somebody to push you out of here, you better pick somebody faster, because every person in this place can outrun the two of us.
Okay, Dan, there's a great picture of Harry and John on Facebook now. And
yeah.
I just enjoyed seeing that picture again. And I hope people, if they can go online and go to our Facebook page, they can just see a wonderful picture of these two guys in the studio, because that's how it was. Sometimes it was ridiculous. It would get a little out of control, and you'd want to say, "Hey, you guys, you know, we got a radio program going here. Quit talking to each other like you're all alone in a bar."
Yeah, Scott, I remember a few times where you expressed something about herding cats when John and Harry would start.
Oh boy, yeah, we had some good times. I remember the time that I was talking about this unusual relationship between two firefly genus, the Photinus and the Photurus, and one, the female of one, flashes the sequence that attracts the male of the other species in order to trap him and eat him in order to convey some chemical defenses, because the one species is chemically defended and the other is not. And Harry and I were having this conversation, and of course, Harry opened his mouth and said something, and I just grabbed my head and went, "Oh my God, we're going to hear about this." And shortly after that, we got a note from one of our listeners who said that Harry and I were the worst 10 minutes on radio.
Oh, no.
And so then my joke to Harry was, "You know what they're going to do, Harry? They're going to double our time, so we'll only be half as bad." but he was there, and he always had a message. He always was focused on teaching. You're right, Scott.
Teaching,
I was wondering, can you guys estimate how many students he had over the course of his teaching career? How many kids, young adults he touched with his philosophy and knowledge?
20, 40, 60. Well, 30. say he had 50 a year for 30 years.
Wow.
So, I would guess something like that. The thing, also, he loved to take him out in the woods. I mean, he had his classroom was all around him outside, and that was another thing. And when the oil spill occurred, he used it as a classroom. The oil spill occurred at Itasca Community College with 1.5 million gallons of oil spilled there. And Harry used it as teach him how, first of all, about wetlands, and then how the wetland recovered. He did it for years. Mm.
Yeah, that was amazing. And you know, the other story I love about Harry and about the college was he brought a deer thorax, a deer carcass, to hang on campus so that the birds could come and eat the suet. And he just did it. I mean, as Heidi Houghton said the other day, as one does in northern Minnesota. He hung a deer carcass. Well, it didn't go over too well. there were students who were offended, and even above the student level, there were administrators who were offended. But Harry and Sue actually took the deer carcass down and took it over to a patch of forest near the campus. And one of Sue's students then did a study on what came to eat the carcass and how long it took for it to disappear.
Oh, cool.
So teaching was a part of both of their lives, and Harry could take an example like that where he may have pushed the boundaries a little bit.
So that brings up, I remember when I first started at KAXE at the old Davies Hall, Harry's Prairie, what was that?
Well, Harry's Prairie was just exactly that. He created a prairie between two buildings, and the idea there was to have, he had a wetlands, he had native willows, he had cattails, he had created this small niche environment, and then he taught there because there were lots of things there to bring birds and animals onto the campus. And so he, Harry's Prairie, I don't believe it exists anymore, but the whole idea to get students out to understand that different biomes attracted different things, different animals. So,
and of course, John, there were times during the year, like maybe now, this late winter or late fall, where it didn't look very good. And I remember some of the maintenance guys at the college would say, "Hey, can we clean this up?
Can we mow it?
Can we mow it right?" Yeah, and of course that wasn't the point. But yeah, you know, Harry used to stick his head in the station after the sports page on Thursday mornings. Harry was a proud alumni of Michigan State. And, of course, on the sports page, we talk about Minnesota sports. And, you know, and he'd always kid me. He'd stick his head in and go, "Hey, you didn't say anything about Michigan State. We're way better than Minnesota. We go to the NCAA tournament every year. Geez, you guys are missing it." You know, he'd say stuff like that. By the way, have we mentioned his cackle? Gosh, what a laugh he had.
Yeah.
He had the best laugh. You know, we were at a meeting, I don't know if it was one of our river fests or what, but the comment I got was, "Where's Harry? I got to hear him laugh."
Right.
Yeah.
They really quickly, I got a note from our good friend Art Norton, and Art was a close friend of Harry's, and I'd like to read some of it because it covers so many of the things that he did. In Art's words, he says, "It's hard to say goodbye to such a good friend, so I won't. Instead, I will continue to remember the many good times we had together. I remember working together with Harry and Sue and others to start the fledgling Audubon Bird Club in Grand Rapids back in the 80s, and the Aldo Leopold movie that Harry brought to the town, Green Fire, about wolves and conservation. And every time I skied the trails at the high school, I thank Harry for the role in designing them. And right up to, if it's successful, completion, Harry was a key member of the local volunteer group that worked to bring a large solar array to Grand Rapids. Maybe we can dedicate the natural plantings that will surround the solar panels to Harry."
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
I just got a text from Heidi Holton saying, "Harry also loved live music. He came to almost every Center Stage Minnesota concert at the Rife Center." And all the great Northern radio shows.
He was also, and you can talk about this, John, he was also a sailor. I bought a Sunfish sailboat from him, but because he had upgraded to one that was a little better, faster, cleaner. did you ever sail with him? Dryer, yep.
Yeah, Harry loved to sail. Harry and I sailed many times together, and he loved to have his hands on the controls. He wanted the tiller and the main sheet in his hands, so it was always fun. I remember going out with him on Wabana in that Chrysler that he bought. It was a Chrysler sailboat, not a Chrysler car. But we were so in such a hurry to get out that we neglected to put the plug in, and we're quite a ways from shore and filling with water quite rapidly and no longer really sailing. And it came out well. I because I was the mailman up there, I knew everybody along the shore. And so I just pull in there. I know those people. God.
Wow. Thanks for joining us.
Neither of us worried too much about details. We were in a hurry. We were going to sail.
Yeah, Katie and Dan, thanks for this time. And I know our listeners, a lot of them probably also have some of their thoughts. And I'm sure we'll hear more. I hope we hear more, a little more, about Harry over the next week or two or three or years even.
Yeah.
He's such a big person, a little guy with a big influence on all of us.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Thanks, John and Scott.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's John Latimer. John was Harry Hutchins' friend and sidekick on their weekly Talk on the Wild Side. And, of course, Scott Hall co-hosted the program for many, many years. Harry passed away yesterday. He was 64, and our heartfelt condolences go out to Harry's wife, Sue, and their children, Tyler and Holly. If you have a comment or a favorite memory of Harry, email us, comments@kaxe.org, or go on our Facebook page and post it there, or you can leave a message at 218-999-9876.
Although Leopold had many memorable things to say, and this is a quote that kind of makes me think of Harry, "One swallow does not make a summer, but one skein of geese cleaving the murk of March thaw is the spring."